Right now, welcome Dr. Jack Rasmus of St. Mary's College. He's an economist there. He also is an author and a frequent guest on this show, where he talks about the economy and economic issues of all sorts. He has a forthcoming book coming out that we'll talk about in just a second. But welcome back to the program, Dr. Rasmus. How are you?
Very good. Thanks to be here.
All right. You have written a letter to a lot of important people here talking about the economic recovery and the kind of stimulus that it will require. And you say it's going to be a heck of a lot more than they're talking about, right?
Absolutely. Yes, I recently developed a 20-point program, which I sent to the House Finance Committee and select congressmen and senators, trying to explain what it would require actually to reverse the huge drop in jobs that we're experiencing right now. We've lost, if you calculated it appropriately, not conservatively, we lost 1 million jobs in each of November and December. That's if you take the government's official numbers, but you add to it the fact that we are converting millions of jobs. At the same time, we're losing millions of jobs. We're converting millions of jobs from full-time to part-time. So we're really losing a lot of half of jobs while we're losing a lot of full jobs. And then a lot of folks as well just aren't able to look for work, find work, and they're called discouraged or willing to work. And if you add it all up, since the recession officially began in December 2007, we've lost at least 5 million jobs, not the official 3 million. So we're about 12, we started with 7 million in the recession, so we're somewhere between 12 and 13 million jobs, unemployed rather. And I think people are going to be continually shocked here in January and February because we're going to continue losing jobs at the same rate, almost 1 million a month. And the Obama program, I don't think, is sufficient in terms of spending to create jobs, nor is it structured in such a way that it will create jobs quickly. And I think, on the other hand, the Republicans are pushing for a lot of business tax cuts, and tax cuts, whether they're to individuals or to businesses, won't have much of an effect in terms of reversing this rapidly deepening recession we're in and the rapid increase in joblessness. So we need a different kind of a program that focuses on quick job creation, not just passing money around to people or giving it to businesses or people who will just pay off their debts or sit on it and not really spend it. We need something that will generate jobs real quick here because we're running out of time in terms of the economy. If we can't turn this crisis around here within the 6 to 9 months, we're going to be in very, very difficult shape. The banks are already in a very bad shape. The banking panic and crisis that accelerated in September, October has not gone away. You probably read in the papers, Citigroup and Bank of America and State Street Bank and all those. They're still in very bad shape, getting worse. So we could be in even more dire straits by the end of this year, early 2010. If this fiscal package is not sufficient and is not targeted appropriately, it won't be enough. It'll be too little, too late. And then we're really in a problem at that particular point.
Well, before we talk about any response or the points that you raised in the letter that you sent to all these influential people, you had mentioned something about tax cuts and those who advocate for them. I've interviewed a number of people in some of the places where I work who say that is the exact solution that we need, tax cuts, particularly for small businesses, where these people would go out, invest in the business, hire new people who would immediately start spending. What do you think of that? You've already indicated what you think, but I wonder what you think.
Yes, well, business invests when they've got consumers willing to buy, and that's the problem. Consumption's fallen off a cliff since October, and I don't care what size of business you are. If you get a tax cut, you're going to lower the cost of investment and expansion, yes, but what business is going to expand its business if they can't sell what they're already producing? That's the problem, and, that's what has to be addressed, the consumption side of this problem, because any economist knows you can reduce my cost of investment down to new investment down to zero, but I'm not going to expand my company and hire more people unless I'm sure I can sell the greater increase in my product. So what happens, and economists are very clear on this, what happens in a very sharp downturn like this is that businesses sit on the tax cut. They use it to pay off debt. They use it, perhaps to acquire other companies, or they use it to pay dividends or pay more stock, or like in the case of Merrill Bank of America, you know, those big guys, they paid themselves $4 billion worth of bonuses after they got $25 billion from the U.S. government.
Or redecorated their offices.
Yeah, redecorated home. But, that's an extreme example. But most businesses will not expand, and that's exactly what has to occur unless there's demand for their products. And as long as people are being laid off in the millions and consumption is collapsing, 401k plans are collapsing, stock plans are collapsing, the value of their homes are declining, consumers are tightening their belts and they're, retracting, and that's what we have to focus on to get that going again. Then business will invest. But if you just give them the money and tax cut, they're just going to sit on it. And by the way, that goes for a lot of consumers, too, who are in trouble. You just give them a tax credit, tax cut, they're not going to spend most of it. They're going to hoard most of it. And we can't afford to miss this last opportunity to stimulate the economy. That's why I'm rather critical, both of the Republicans, who are pushing very hard for more tax cuts, like we just described, and Obama, whose government spending programs are not focused enough, I don't believe, and not large enough to do something about the 6 million we lost in jobs last year and the 5 to 7 million more jobs, if we don't do something, we're going to lose this year. So we've got about 13 million jobs that somehow we've got to replenish. And the Obama program provides for spending $550 billion and then another $275 billion on tax cuts. Well, if you take that $550 billion in spending, he claims it will generate 3 to 4 million jobs. Well, that means 4 million jobs at $137,000 a job. I mean, that's too much to create a job.
All right.
We need to be creating jobs worth about 50,000, 60,000, and instead of creating 3 million of them, which will just make up for the loss of jobs in the last 3 months, we need to be thinking about creating 10-12 million jobs at $50,000, which would be roughly 40,000 maybe in wages, another 5-10,000 in benefits, and a 10,000 per job in margin for the businesses. That's what we should be focusing on. But his program is not focused enough, and that's why I provided another program to the House Finance Committee and others in Congress, suggesting how we might be able to create 10 to 12 million jobs instead of the 3 to 4 million.
Now, you wrote this letter to all these important people on the national level. When did you write it, and have you heard any response whatsoever? And then we'll get into the points of your 20-point program.
Just before the inauguration ceremonies, the end of the week prior to that, I sent the proposals and cover letter to several key people in the finance committees in the House and Senate, and also in California, people who are out here who are representatives that are in my district and so forth. But I haven't heard anything yet, no. I'm sure they're quite busy, and hopefully their staff people have passed it on to particularly Barney Frank of the House Finance Committee and Senator Conrad of the Senate Budget Committee, but we'll see. I haven't sent it directly to the Obama Committee, but I plan to do so as well.
All right. Let's talk about the first part of it, housing market stabilization and consumption restoration. How would you do that?
Yes. At the heart of the financial collapse, which is now translating into the collapse of the real economy and jobs, is the housing market. The big problem is the collapse of housing prices. As housing prices collapse, and they're doing it because there's more and more foreclosures and delinquencies, in other words, excess supply on the market of available housing is driving the price down. As that occurs, lenders and banks that hold those mortgages and mortgage bonds have to keep writing off their losses, and that's what's causing the banks to freeze up, and those losses continue, so the banking balance sheets keep opening up bigger and bigger holes in them. The Federal Reserve is throwing more and more money at it, but the hole keeps opening up. It's forever opening, and they're forever throwing, and they're not really addressing the real problem. The real problem is we got to stop housing price collapse. Now, how do we stop housing price collapse? Well, you got to stop the excess supply coming on the market. People got to be able to afford to maintain those homes. And by the way, it's not just people who got into subprimes. You know, now it's just about everybody who got into a adjustable arm or an interest-only loan or a line of credit or a second loan, and even what we call Alt-A and prime loans. So it's spread throughout the economy.
Yeah, but stop shortening the supply of homes, creating a tighter market. Doesn't that slow down construction, which also drives the economy?
Well, yes, construction may slow down, but it's already slowing down dramatically where we are today. And what we got to do is not only stop the excess supply coming on the market, but we got to solve this housing problem and the collapse of prices at the same time use the resolution of the housing problem as a way to boost consumption in the economy. And that's what my proposal is. It's not just a way to stop housing price collapse, but to boost consumption by homeowners. And there's four or five major points that I'm proposing here. One is we've got to reset principals and reset interests on these loans that were taken out. I mean all kinds of loans, not just subprime, between 2002 and 2007. By resetting the principles in the formulas I proposed, I've described in more detail, I won't go into them here, and resetting interest, what you're going to do is make it more affordable to people to remain in their homes, and even those who aren't about to foreclose or delinquent, you will give them obviously more cash to consume.
Well, that sounds real good for the people in those homes, but I wonder what the bankers think about that and their lobbyists and the people who make the laws. And I think of the vicious circle of those that go in and out that door. I can name a whole bunch of them who are lobbying, who used to be in Congress now, and the pressure they put upon people not to do that. That sounds like something that would benefit working people and not the banking industry, in other words, and I don't see them letting that happen. What do you say?
Oh, of course not. No, and they would have to. The banking industry, the mortgage lenders, would have to suffer a loss. That's where another proposal I have that corresponds to resetting principles and interest comes into play. And that proposal is a pattern on what we actually did in the 1930s. In the 1930s, we created a couple institutions, the Reconstruction Finance Corp and what was called the Homeowners Loan Corporation. And that's what we have to do today. In fact, I'm proposing that we essentially nationalize all residential mortgage and small business commercial property ownership. In other words, we've got to get these middlemen out of this that created the mess, the lenders and brokers and so forth. And for those families making $160,000 a year and below, there should be one source here, and that's the government or residential mortgage market. Now, that's exactly what we did in the 30s. And housing prices continued to collapse from 1929 to 35 until we did that. And then housing prices stabilized from that point on. Now, the banks and lenders are going to be, quote, hurt by this, you might say. But my proposal is to pay them off 50 cents on the dollar on their debt over the term of the life of these mortgages. So they'd get something, at least. We're not saying that they pay nothing. And I think many of them would probably be happy to get 50 cents on the dollar on some of these mortgages that are almost worthless now anyway. So how do we finance this, what I might call a homeowner small business loan corporation? Well, we finance it using $950 billion that's already been committed. In other words, we already have $350 billion earmarked for the TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program, that hasn't been paid, that was supposed to be focused on the homeowner, but wasn't. $350 billion of the $750 billion was given to the big banks. Well, we got $350 billion less. Let's take that, and let's take the $600 billion that the Federal Reserve has earmarked for the housing industry, $950 billion. And with that, we can implement this program to reduce principals and interest and pay off the lenders 50 cents on the dollar over the next 30 years. Now, in addition to that, what I'm proposing as part of the housing solution here is for those who don't have loans since 2002, homeowners, we give them a 15% homeowners investment tax credit. In other words, 15% off their taxes to fix up their homes, renovations and so forth, and purchases, including major items in the home, inside the home, which would include heating, air conditioning systems, and roofs. And,
well, that sounds like that would generate some of the construction industry and
yes,
appliance industry and building and all that other sort of stuff. That would help. Yeah.
Yes, it would.
That
yes,
makes
would.
Sense.
And then we need to have another opportunity for those who aren't in foreclosure delinquency, and that is the option at their choice. Uncontested, that if they want to lower their monthly interest rates by stretching out their loans to 40 years, they should be able to do that just by completing some simple paperwork. And then the final point is that we need to reinstitute what we had up until the 1970s. It was called Regulation Q. Regulation Q put a ceiling on interest rates. Anybody who's got credit cards knows how they're being really abused by the credit card
it's
company.
It's usury now.
Yeah, it is. 20%, and they're raising it. And people aren't aware, but these banks with credit cards make more money from fees, late fees and penalties, than they do now loaning out interest. One great way of boosting consumption is to put ceilings on these interest rates. Bring them down to, 8, 9, 10%, and that's the max they can charge on these. All these proposals are designed to use the housing recovery as a way of not just stopping the supply and the collapse of housing prices, which is at the core of our financial collapse, but to use the housing recovery as a way to stimulate consumption. And the good thing about this approach is that you stimulate consumption without having to raise the budget deficit through tax cuts.
I'm sure a lot of people would want to know more. They can read some of your writings at your website. What is it?
It's Kyklos Productions, spelled KYKLOS Productions, plural.com.
Maybe some of the ideas of Dr. Jack Rasmus, who is an economist. He is the author of the forthcoming book, Epic Recession and Global Financial Crisis. His website, www.keyclosproductions.com, where you can read his writings. And you can talk to him right now if you want to call 412-333-KDKA. Let's move on to part two, job creation.
As I described earlier, we have at the focus of the crisis right now is not just the banking instability and so forth, but the fact that we're losing, it looks like every month, somewhere between 600,000 and a million jobs. And all the indicators are that job loss is going to continue for several more months at best. My problem with the Obama program is that the composition, as well as the amount, is not sufficient to make up for the 5 to 6 million net new jobs we've lost since the recession began in December of 2007, nor the what I project is going to be at least another 5 million jobs lost here in 2009. We have to figure out how are we going to restore 10 to 12 million jobs. Well, Obama's program, first of all, he's only talking about 4 million jobs that will cost us $550 billion. Two things wrong with that. It's not enough jobs to restore, to stop the economic collapse. And secondly, at $550 billion, 4 million jobs, we're talking about spending per job, $137,500 per job, roughly. That's a waste. We can't create those kinds of jobs at that kind of cost. We have to be looking at creating jobs at $60,000 and do it quickly. Part of the problem in this program is a lot of it is dedicated to infrastructure. Infrastructure should be part of the package of job creation, but should not be the focus because the cost per job is high in infrastructure. You're talking about mostly construction work. Most of our layoffs are not construction workers, although certainly there are a lot of construction workers who need to be put back to work. A lot of them are white-collar jobs, service-type jobs, and so forth. And a job program such as his that focuses on infrastructure, you may find out that you have a shortage of construction workers. And while you have millions and tens of millions of people who aren't construction workers who are still unemployed. So that should be part of it, but not as heavily focused as his is. I think where you can create a lot of jobs, and we should put also significant amount of spending, is in the following. State and local government. We can create jobs quickly in that area, and if we don't, we're going to lose millions of state and local jobs.
What about all the people out here groaning right now going, more government jobs? Gee whiz, we need smaller government. What about what they say?
Well, what we got to do is put people back to work first. Okay, that's the single most important thing, because if you don't do that, in another year, we're going to be staring into the gulf of a true global depression. So we need to deal with first things first, and that is to put people back to work as quickly as we can. And you can generate jobs quickly in that area, school districts, so forth, teachers and support, et cetera. I'm not saying we focus totally on that or solely on that, but that has to be part of a jobs creation package. Not simply to create jobs, but my package says retain jobs as well. We got 38 states out of the 50 that are in deep financial trouble here and experiencing losses, and some states are experiencing huge losses.
Yeah, your state right there, California.
Yes, California is in very, very bad shape, but so is Florida, and so is New York and some other, Illinois, some other states.
And well, our governor said we're facing a huge deficit here in Pennsylvania, too.
That's right, Michigan, et cetera. If we don't do something about the states and state and local city governments, they're going to start laying off in massive numbers this year as well. Schools, school districts, my program proposes $300 billion in infrastructure spending over the next 3 years, $100 billion a year, plus $200 billion for state and local government and $100 billion for schools. Now, as part of this whole idea of we got to have a broad composition to the jobs spending program, I also propose $100 billion on those growth sector jobs. In other words, you can create jobs pretty quickly in those areas where we already had pretty good job growth.
So, James.
Right? Like healthcare, for example, we should, and some service sectors, we should be looking at how we can re-stimulate that and get fast job creation going once again in those sectors. The other area is we got to do something about manufacturing jobs. Those are often the best paying jobs and provide a good standard of living for people. And it's been just a shame how we've sent these jobs overseas. Somewhere between 8 and 10 million over the last 20 years. Just 3 million alone to China, we've lost jobs. So,
and when you talk about manufacturing jobs, you also have proposals for a certain amount to be spent on the auto industry, too.
Yes, absolutely. We have to face the fact that the auto industry, we cannot maintain three major U.S. auto companies and their ability to produce all the cars that they do, and all the foreign competitors who are in the United States producing cars as well. We have to consolidate the auto industry. But in doing that, we have to protect the people who work there. We need to introduce something like Germany, in which when people get laid off because of structural changes like this, they get 80% of their pay for 2 years and they get retrained. We have to have a similar program for auto workers, and not just auto workers, but others in the industry, auto parts supply, auto dealerships, and all the others that are impacted by the auto industry, of retraining as we consolidate these companies once again. But I wouldn't give a penny to the auto industry unless they stop the expansion of their plants overseas. There's no sense that we subsidize their foreign plant expansion, like in St. Petersburg, Russia. Ford has a big plant they're expanding, and GM has big expansions going on in Shanghai and China and places like that. We've subsidized these companies and their foreign expansion far too long. If they want to be American companies, well, then they got to bring their money home and create their industry here in the U.S.
Especially if they want our tax money to continue, right?
Absolutely. That's a must. And, we have to get more government oversight, including local government oversight on what's going on in these plants going forward. And then finally, you know, we have to spend at least $125 billion in unemployment insurance. We got all these unemployed. Even the government itself estimates $79 billion is going to cost with unemployment insurance. That's a $36 billion increase over last year. But then we have food stamps and Medicaid and SCHIP. They're all related to the unemployment. And when people say, well, we shouldn't spend so much on jobs, well, if you don't, you're going to spend $100 billion on supporting all the people who are unemployed and then not producing anything. So you add it all up, and I believe it's going to take about over 2 years here, a $1 trillion jobs retention and creation program order to generate 10 to 12 million jobs, which is just about what we lost last year and going to lose this year.
In the meantime, we're talking to Dr. Jack Rasmus here. He is an economist at St. Mary's College in California. He also wrote a letter to Barney Frank and many other influential people in the new administration, suggesting some of the things that we are talking about on this show in terms of a recovery plan for the economy. Let's go. He's got some other things, and we'll get to them, but I want to get to a couple of the phone calls that are on the line. Let's go to Lou in Ohio Township. Lou, you're on News Radio 1020 KDKA with Jack Rasmus.
Thank you. I'd like to make quick points and get some response off him. There was so much he said. When he says cut the middleman out in the mortgages business, that seems like that would increase the ranks of the unemployed. When he says that not many construction workers are showing up on the unemployment rolls, I know a ton of guys that are self-employed who don't qualify for unemployment who are right now crushed, and they won't show up on the unemployment rolls. But my main point is, why not the alternative plan I hear that's only going to cost $800 billion, where we suspend the Social Security and Medicare tax for a year? That way employers and employees all benefit, and it would be instant in everybody's paycheck, and it would really help businesses. I have a small business, and our biggest problem is the 15th coming up with all that money to give to the federal government. If we cut that out for a year, it would only be $800 billion. It would help everybody. It would help the poor the most, because it's exponentially a bigger part of their paycheck, and we know the poor never say that, so that would be coming right back into the economy. I wondered his thoughts on that. It seems simpler, and also to say we need to expand government, I wish you wouldn't have said that on Pennsylvania airwaves, because we have the biggest government in the world, and it's crushing us. But anyway, can I hear his response?
Okay, it looks like there's about 4 points that you want to make.
Yes, sir.
And one is middlemen. If we take the middlemen out of the housing mortgage industry, won't we be creating unemployment? There's most of those jobs have been eliminated already, simply because of the excesses and the speculation of the banks and the mortgage industry created this a monster problem that we have in the mortgage industry. And to say we should do something about boosting jobs in terms of real estate, the lenders and mortgage people means to say, well, should we continue what we're doing? There's going to be some dislocation there when you eliminate it. But I'm sure, if we create jobs elsewhere, that those people can move to those other jobs, which will not, undermine the economy the way that particular industry has. I did not say that there aren't construction people out of work. There's massive amounts of construction people out of work. And I do say we need a greater infrastructure program than even Obama's proposing. But I'm saying that's not enough. Those create more long-term jobs. They take a while to create, particular alternative energy jobs. In doing that, it's very expensive per job creation. We can't rely primarily on that. I think that's what the problem is, too much reliance, over-reliance on those jobs that take a long time to create, that cost a lot, don't create as many jobs as we could create elsewhere for the buck. As far as suspending FICA, in other words, payroll tax with Social Security, you got to realize that we've been dragging the surplus out of Social Security, the government, for over 20 years now, about 25 years. The U.S. government has diverted $2.3 trillion of Social Security surplus and has used it and spent it, put essentially special T-bills and bonds that can't be spent, IOUs, in Social Security.
Yeah, but can I make a quick point? My idea is to, instead of do everything...
Well, I haven't finished my point. Let me finish the point on Social Security, if I may.
Okay, thanks.
You know, it's already... within 10 years, we're already going to be facing a shortage. So I don't think the answer is to tax workers or to eliminate Social Security benefits when the big problem we have in terms of our tax structure is huge amounts of tax restructuring that we've been giving for businesses and people on capital incomes for the last 25 years. If you want to deal with something... as a solution in the tax side, you've got to deal with that as a possible solution. There are other ways, in other words, to help small businesses and their workers than taking away their contributions to Social Security, so I would not be in agreement with that. As far as your last point of government crushing us, well, yes and no. Government on behalf of whom is the question. And, yeah, we're getting crushed right now with the government having given $3 to $4 trillion to the banks and nothing's happened. You know, we're all going to have to pay somewhere $12,000 to $15,000 per taxpaying family for that transfer of our taxpayer money to the banks and the financial industry, which has produced nothing. We've thrown $4 trillion at them since the crisis began, and we've got interest rates, long-term rates, reduced maybe 1%. That's a pretty inefficient way of using $4 trillion. So government has really messed up when it comes to that particular solution. But, you know, the private sector has messed up, too. And the point is, how do we get out of this? The banks aren't getting us out of this. Private business people have got to watch out for their own bottom line, their own balance sheet, and you know, their job is to make a profit for themselves, not to resolve the economic crisis. And the only source now, given the major dimensions of this crisis, is for the government to do that, but do it on behalf of everybody, not on behalf of just the banks.
The point I was making about FICA is, you don't take $800 billion out of it. The $800 billion that would have gone into it from the workers instead comes from all of your policies. Eliminate all of them because none of them will work, as we know from FDR, who only extended the Depression into a Great Depression. Put that billion, the trillion that you have, throw that into FICA in place of what was going to come out of the workers, and I think that would help.
Well, first of all, you said a whole number of things that are just historically inaccurate. FDR did not cause the Great Depression. He inherited it in 1932. And then he pursued a policy of 2 years, a business policy in the first 2 years of trying to prop up prices that didn't work. And then out of desperation, the New Deal came along in 1935. And it was only when the New Deal came along that they stabilized it. And the facts are quite clear that the economy began to stabilize in 1935, 1936. And then when they started under business pressure to repeal the New Deal in 1937 after only 2 years, then we went back down into depression once again. Those are the historical facts, and you know, to say that FDR caused the depression is really you know, a great exaggeration and inaccurate at that. And I guess we simply disagree. I don't agree with you that the government is always the bad solution. Government on behalf of whom is the question.
All right.
Not government
small
per
business
se.
Owner.
Luke,
I know you
Luke.
Got a small
yeah,
business
quick.
Owner would appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Let's see. We'll get one more call in very quickly. Ray, you're on KDK. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was listening to you on the radio in my car, and your guest sounds really good. But the guy called in talking about this so-called holiday for the FICA tax. As soon as I heard that, I was wondering, you know, what the heck are they trying to pull? That, you know, they're already, you know, $2 trillion short on that. Why would you want to start putting money in there?
All right.
And, you know, I think that's a real bad idea. That's what Barack Obama wants to do.
Okay, thank you very much for your call. You want a quick comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, we've got to be careful to think, you know, we've been sort of programmed over the last several decades since Reagan to think that all solutions are tax cuts for business. We've been doing that for quite some time, and the result has been a gross inequality of distribution of income in this country, which is part of the problem why consumers have fallen off a cliff. If you look at IRS data, in 1978, the wealthiest 1% households There's 114 million households in the U.S. The wealthiest 1% had 8% of the total income. Today, as of 2006, latest data, that wealthiest 1% has increased their share of income to 22%.
Jack, this is really unfair to do this in 45 seconds, but single-payer health, what would that mean for our economy if that were enacted?
Okay. Well, first of all, it would relieve a lot of employers from having to pay health care, which would give them an opportunity to hire more people, first of all. Secondly, single-payer health care would relieve a lot of working folks having to pay huge amounts of premiums and co-pays and deductibles, which would free up a lot more for consumption.
And only the insurance companies would scream, right?
Well, yes, but, you know, we spend $2.3 trillion on health care in this country, more than anybody in the world, and $1 trillion of that goes just to insurance companies and middlemen who don't deliver one iota of health care service.
And on that note, we've got to close it out. Jack Rasmus, thank you very much for being here. In the succeeding hours, we'll plug your website some more, okay?
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, thank you.